This week, Frank Reno returns to the Wind City Sports Podcast to pick up where we left off last week in the middle of his journey through the CFL. This week, we'll also get into his mental health advocacy, public speaking, and how to maintain your mental health during the pandemic.
Hello, how you doing? It's Zach Cassie.
Adam Henrique.
Joe Siddle. Tom Crawford.
Todd Warner.
Brett Romberg.
TJ Laramie.
And holy mackinaw, you're listening to Wind City Sports.
What up, everybody? My name is Jason Moore, and thank you for streaming or downloading this episode of the Wind City Sports Podcast. Windsor's only local sports radio show and podcast, live on CJAM 99.1 FM every Thursday in Windsor, Detroit at 12:30 and replays on Tuesdays at 8 p.m., even during this pandemic. And of course, you can listen to the Wind City Sports Podcast wherever you're listening to it right now, or directly on windcitysports.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any podcast platform. We also have a Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram account at WinCity_sports and a YouTube account with some Wind City Sports exclusives, previews, and much more on there. So give us a like, follow, subscribe, whatever it may be. But we'll talk about that at the end of the show, as we normally do. But today is Thursday, April 23rd, 2020, and it's episode 192 of Wind City Sports. And of course, if you listened last week, and if you haven't, go back and listen to it, because we have part two of Frank Reno on the Wind City Sports Podcast this week, a former CFL player, also OUA player here at the University of Windsor for our Lancers. Now things are just starting to pick up. If I'm not mistaken, we kind of spliced it at a, maybe not the best time, but there was no good time to do so. We're going to continue into Frank's story through the CFL. He's got a crazy story amongst what we've already heard, and then kind of go through his two seasons in the CFL, why he ended up leaving, and what he's been doing since then. Everything that's gone on in his life, everything plays a part here, as you will learn with Frank, and kind of learn about what he's doing now, some other things outside of his mental health advocacy and motivational speaking. He's got a nice little side gig going on that also helps out the University of Windsor Lancers football players, kind of giving back to the team that kind of helped start his professional career, obviously not only pertaining to football. And aside from that, we're going to try and break down as much as we can in local sports news. We're going to try and spice things up for local sports news and do something a little bit different than we normally do. Normally, we're keeping up on games and updates from teams and stuff like that pre-pandemic. And since then, we try to focus on the positive here and not really talk about COVID-19. So I'm going to try and bring you some kind of, out of left field news, just kind of get caught up with some of our past guests and people in Windsor, what they might be doing in the near future. We have some announcements to get to later on, and just kind of reminisce about some past stuff that's happened here in Wind City and on the Wind City Sports Podcast, and kind of go a little bit more mainstream as well, obviously. A lot of people talking about Tiger King, and of course I've watched that, but The Last Dance debuted earlier this week, or this weekend, I suppose. It's going to be a 10-episode, I believe, documentary about the 97 Chicago Bulls with Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and much more so. In the first episode, it was strictly all on Michael Jordan during that season, of course. And then episode two is about Scottie Pippen. So it seems like they're going to kind of run through some players, maybe run through some certain storylines or whatever happened that season, which I'm not even like super, super familiar with. Obviously, I know the outcome, but there's a lot of stuff that I didn't know, obviously, with their coach and with Michael Jordan and stuff like that. So it's going to be interesting to see that part of it. And another documentary that is definitely not under the radar, at least for wrestling fans, made here in Ontario. You guys should all check out, regardless if you're a wrestling fan or not. That's something I always tell people. It's Dark Side of the Ring. It's on Vice TV. And as I speak right now, there's going to be a new episode tonight with about Dino Bravo, who's another Canadian wrestler. And all these stories, like there's probably, to date now, I think that there's probably 11 or 12 episodes, and literally like two of them, the topic of which has to do with wrestling. A lot of them are about the people in wrestling and what they have done or what has happened to them or something. It's called Dark Side of the Ring for a reason. So tonight they get into the murder of Dino Bravo. He was a professional wrestler from Montreal, actually. And he ran with the mob down there, I guess through his family, had some connections, and it ultimately cost him his life, you know, as the rumors had gone for 30 years. So apparently tonight there's going to be a lot of revelations. There has been in the past, the first season, and a little bit here in the second season. There's people involved in these stories talking about it for the first time on camera ever and stuff like that. So again, check it out. There's some stories out there. And even myself, being a wrestling fan, watching the first season, there was one on this dude, Gino Hernandez, never heard of him. Blew me away. It doesn't matter if you like wrestling or not. Obviously, they kind of give you the background of the person and what they did in wrestling. But these stories are insane. They're on par with Netflix documentaries, if you ask me. And another thing that can be a Netflix documentary series, which actually I'll get to later on in the show, I plan to at least, and I tweeted about it earlier. It's the 4-year anniversary of the, I don't know who actually discovered it, but the Windsor Star reporting about Jonathan Nicola. And if you don't know who he is, stay tuned to after the interview with Frank Reno. We're going to get into that right now. We're going to pick up where we left off. But first, really, really quickly, I just want to tell you about Cedric's Combat Corner podcast. If you don't know, Win City Sports presents the Combat Corner podcast by Cedric Ben, a boxing coach here in Windsor. During the quarantine, he's been going back and reviewing old fights from back in the day, some classics. And we have a new one out, CCC 35, taking it back to Pernell Whitaker versus Julio Chavez. And the YouTube video didn't really make it, so usually what we do is we release the audio podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all that. And then as well, Cedric likes to put a video up on his YouTube channel. And for this episode, the video got pulled due to copyright. So as you might have seen the preview on our Instagram, on YouTube, we just have a stock picture up there with the audio. But it's a cool thing he's doing. You can follow along with another YouTube video, actually watch the fight and listen to his commentary and review as it goes along. It's a pretty cool concept he's got going on. So check out Cedric's Combat Corner on YouTube at Cedric Sports across the board. But now it's time to jump into that interview with Frank Reno. So here we go. All right, Frank, welcome back. Thanks again for joining me. We're going to kind of pick up where we left off last week. We were just talking about, you know, your first pro football game in the CFL after coming off an ACL tear. That was in your first season with in the CFL 2017 with Winnipeg. And then from there, you ended up going to Hamilton. So what's the story there?
That was crazy. I haven't really told this story that much, but so 2016, I got drafted by Winnipeg, went to camp. They cut me, went back to school, and I played one more year at the University of Windsor. Okay. And 2017, I made a commitment that, you know, I was going to go make the roster. I was going to make the team, and went to training camp, had a successful training camp, and I ended up getting signed to the practice roster. And so after I got signed to the practice roster, I ended up getting moved up to active because there was one of the Canadians on special teams actually pulled his hamstring. So for the first 6 weeks of the season, I was actually on the active roster. And that was actually such a blessing for me because I was not once I got put on the practice roster, I was not expecting to play. And then I had an opportunity to get some reps in during the first 6 weeks. And now it's funny because in reflection, I never realized that's how business works. Like, that's show business. You know what I mean? Like, that's the professional world. Yeah, yeah. But the reason why I'm saying this is because I wasn't ready for the emotional roller coaster that the CFL is. And it's very, if you're not prepared for what is going to probably happen to you, especially when you're drafted in the eighth round like me, then what happened to me is what may happen to most, or not most, but to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so I was very fortunate in my career to be very successful, had a lot of opportunities, and, you know, it was kind of like the norm for me. So when I got to Winnipeg in 2017 and I was on the active roster, that was kind of like an up for me after, you know, I was put on the practice roster, which to me, I kind of beat myself up a little bit at the time. I felt like it was a failure because I felt like I did so well and I thought I would be on the active roster. And so when I got bumped up to the active roster, I felt better. I was like, okay, here we go. I'm on and I'm going to be playing all year. After week six, my teammate who messed up his hamstring, he was back on the active, he was back playing. So I got put back to practice roster and that absolutely crushed me. Like, for me, you know, I was always playing. I was always on the field, and I was always, you know, I was always dressed up. So for me not to be dressed, like, that crushed me. And so for me, I was, I'm the kind of person that when I, you know, when I get beat up or when I get kind of, like, roughed up, I go into, like, I would call it, like, not even defense mode, but I just go into, like, my cave, I call it, and I take care of myself. I got to figure things out. So, and the reason why I'm saying all this is because one thing led to another, and 3 weeks after I got put back on the practice roster, I got cut from Winnipeg because I missed a meeting in the morning. The reason why I missed the meeting in the morning was because I had misread the schedule that was up, and I thought the day after the game we had the day off, and then the following day we were going into meetings, when it was in fact we were going into meetings the day after the game, and the following day we had the day off. So I was at home, and one of my teammates called me after the meeting. He's like, "Frank, where are you?" So I drive over to the stadium, and first thing, you know, first person I see is the head coach, and he's like, "We're going to let you go." And just like that, you know, I was like, I was crushed. I was like, oh my God, like, I just got cut, you know, I didn't really know what was going on. So I just kind of grabbed my stuff from my locker and took off, called my agent, and my agent, you know, Fred, you know, probably one of the most optimistic guys I've ever seen in my life. He's sick. He was like, "Okay, you're good. I'm going to find you some work. We're good. We'll figure it out." And that night he called me back and he said, "All right, Hamilton needs you. So we're going to fly you out to Hamilton." And I'm pretty sure it was like the next morning I was on a flight to Hamilton. And so I spent 2 weeks in Hamilton. And so this is like this emotional roller coaster of the CFL that I was not prepared for. In reflection, I'm like, wow, like, that's normal. But like, I was not ready for it. Mm-hmm. And so I got, and again, so to kind of like backtrack, the reason why I was so, you know, I didn't understand the schedule, and the reason why, I didn't go to the meetings was really because after I got put back on the practice roster, I really like shut down. I was, like I said, beat up. I went back into what I call the cave, and I was just trying to figure out, like, why did I get put on the practice roster when I wasn't looking at the bigger picture of like what a professional football team is doing. You know what I mean? The guy that hurt his hamstring had played for the team last year. So like, he's in a better position and he knows more than me. Like, they're obviously going to put him back on, but I didn't see that. Mm-hmm. I didn't even see it. Like, for me, I just didn't see that I was the next man up as a Canadian. So like, for me, I didn't realize that if I stayed ready, you know what I mean, I would be okay. For me, I was just defeated. I was so negative about it. And yeah, so, you know, I wasn't paying attention. I was depressed, to be honest with you. Like, it really beat me up and it put me in a bad place. And so when I did get cut, that just added to that, you know, really like that depression. But I got excited again. I was happy because I got signed by Hamilton. And to me, that was exciting because I'm in Winnipeg, far away from my family, and now I'm flying to Hamilton.
Yeah.
I'm closer to my family. So for me, I was like, wow, this is it. This is the team I'm going to play the rest of my football career with, you know. And like, I'm optimistic. So, you know, although I was feeling depressed in that moment, I was like, all right, I'm good. This is it. Next opportunity. One thing led to the next. I had a couple games with Hamilton. And show business comes back around, and we're literally, like, I'm packed, ready to go to BC to play a football game. And all week I'm on the depth chart for special teams. You know, I'm happy. Like, I'm on all four specials. Where in Winnipeg, I was on no specials. I was on one here and there, and then I go to Hamilton. I'm like, wow, they're, like, playing me. I'm good. I'm doing well. Da, da, da. And then the day of the flight to BC, I get pulled into the office, and they're like, "All right, Frank, we love you, but we got to let you go." And I'm like, "What?" I couldn't believe it. I'm like, "What is going on here?" So they flew me back to Winnipeg. I had my car still in Winnipeg, so went back to Winnipeg, picked up all my stuff, and I ended up driving back home to Windsor. And that was my short stint in Hamilton.
Wow, what a roller coaster.
Yeah. Crazy.
It is crazy. That's all one season, so, too.
Pardon me?
That's all in one season.
Yeah, that was in the first, I would say that was in the first 11 weeks. So,
oh my God.
It was, yeah, that was the first 11 weeks in the season. And then it's crazy how life happens. But so I drove back home and I spent 2 weeks in Windsor. And I felt like I was done for the year playing football. And it's just weird how it all happened that I spent a couple weeks back home. And this will kind of, I'll backtrack to that in a second, but I was back working at the Keg. Life is back to normal. You know, I'm back home for the summer, just doing my thing. And my manager at the Keg didn't schedule me for this upcoming week. And jokingly, you know, admittedly, I was a little bit, you know, feeling it. I'm like, hey, don't worry about it. Winnipeg's going to call me and I'm going to go back. And what would you know, that weekend, before the week that I was not scheduled, I'm out partying with my friends and my agent calls me. It's about 9:30 o'clock. He's like, yo, Winnipeg wants you back. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, man, I've been talking to them and they want to sign you back and bring you back to Winnipeg. I'm like, what the? The next thing you know, Sunday, I'm flying back to Winnipeg. And I'm back in Winnipeg, I would say, what now? A month after I got cut, I'm back in the flight to Winnipeg. And I spent the last month of the regular season and first week of the playoffs, I was back in Winnipeg for about 5 weeks.
That's insane, man.
Yeah, it was crazy. And, like, everybody's got their crazy story, but, like, this is mine, you know? And, like, for me, that was wild. I was like, they cut me. Why would they ever want me back? And then I realized that, you know, that's how business works, and that's just kind of, that was my story, and that's how it had to happen, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, all these sports are business, and mm-hmm. you definitely were kind of, you know, in that system. And I'm sure that, you know, all your experience, especially in the first 11 weeks, still was coming into play throughout your career. After 2018, it seems like you decided to wrap it up. So I'm sure that that was a part of it. If you can elaborate.
Yeah. And it just, so I finished that, the 2017 year, finished up with Winnipeg. And then I made that commitment to myself that I was going to go back and, mm-hmm. you know, like, this was it. I was like, Frank, like, you want to be a professional athlete. You had your bumps and bruises in 2017, like, let's go get it in 2018. So I went in, I was like, you know, 3-4 hours a day in the gym, eating well, training, working at, like, I was just doing my thing. I was grinding. And I was very fortunate because, you know, in 2018, I went to training camp and I did well. And, you know, after learning all the lessons that I learned in 2017, I really applied them in 2018. And I made the active roster. And I was so, like, it was probably the most exciting thing that had happened to me up to that point in my professional football career. Probably, like, up there with me getting drafted. And I was so thankful, but, you know, life has a way of happening to you. And week 6 in D.C., in British Columbia, when we were playing the Lions, I tore my ACL on my right side. Okay. So it was very devastating for me. I was still optimistic. I was still optimistic in the recovery and that I would be okay. But there was always that that part of me that kind of knew that it was, you know, it was kind of over. You know, 2 ACL tears. That was kind of, I knew, I had a feeling it was, my professional career was over, but I never really wanted to admit it. And yeah, one thing led to the next, and I went through a few things in 2018 that really put it all into perspective for me. Mm-hmm.
Of course, yeah. Of course, we kind of know your story from CBC, but I'm sure to attest again to that first year and all your experiences in life in general actually have kind of led you to what you're doing now.
Yeah, man. I'm very thankful for everything, because everything that I've been through really opened my eyes to life, and you know, life is, for me, life was really football. And that's all, like, I was tunnel vision on football. And what I realized is that there's so much going on in the world and so much going on in life. And I'm thankful for everything that has happened to me. And I'm thankful for everything that will continue to happen in my life, because that's what life's about. It's about living and experiencing. But, in 2018, I went through a lot of mental health issues. I was diagnosed. I had experienced a few things, and I was diagnosed with bipolar. and I was also I was clinically depressed, and I was also experiencing generalized anxiety, or like diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder. So I had a lot of labels that were slapped on me within like a couple months. And for me, you know, with the trauma of, you know, losing at that time, like I call it like the death of my football career, the death of like Frank Reynolds, the football player, and, you know, being slapped with all these labels that I'm like mentally ill. You know, the state, like the heavy stigma on mental health is, you know, when you're slapped with these labels, like that's what you identify with. And me being somebody who I identify strongly with things, I identified strongly as a football player. And when that was taken away from me, I identified strongly as somebody who's mentally ill. And that took me down a very dark path for a long time where I became suicidal, and I was really depressed to the point where I was admitted to the hospital for my second time. In a very dark place in my life. But I'm thankful for it, especially now that I'm on the other side of all of it, because all of those dark days really allow me to appreciate all of the bright days that I'm experiencing now. I went through a lot of issues with my mental health, and that was really just me, you know, on this journey of self-discovery, trying to figure out who I am, you know, where do I fit in this world where I'm no longer the football player. So where do I fit in? And, you know, where am I going to kind of find my way? And that's what's kind of led me to a lot of these things that I'm, you know, slowly working myself into now. And that's where I'm finding myself and finding my juice and finding my passion and talking a bit more about mental health. Mm-hmm. I feel like I have the perfect voice for it. Being somebody who played professional football, I can definitely relate to a lot of men and women, obviously, who experience mental health issues in sport, and specifically to the fact that as athletes, you know, we dedicate a large majority of our time and a large majority of our life to sports. And in terms of football is not something that you can play for your entire life. When there comes a time in your life where you put down the shoulder pads and the helmet or you put them on for the last time. And it's kind of sad to think, but like, you don't know when that is. You know, it's going to come. And for me, you know, I mean, I don't know if it's the last time that I wore the shoulder pads and the helmet back when we played BC in 2018. But what I do know is that at this present moment, that was the last time. And it was very hard for me. And I know that for a lot of athletes, that's hard. And I feel like it takes a massive toll on your mental health. So I'm really excited, and I'm thankful for this newfound perspective and this this energy that I have towards talking about mental health, because I feel like many people do, but I don't feel like enough people do, and I feel like I can be that voice for those people that do suffer in silence, because depression and anxiety and mental health or mental illnesses, because mental health, everybody has mental health. Just like everybody has physical health. Mm-hmm. Mental illness is diagnosis. You know, like, I've been diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder. I've been diagnosed as manic depressive, and I've been diagnosed as bipolar and all these labels and everything. So that's what mental illness is. And a lot of people that have been diagnosed with these things, they suffer in silence. And a large majority of the reason why they suffer in silence is because of the stigma. They don't, you know, they don't want to get judged, and they don't want to be looked at differently for issues that they may have. And so what I found, especially when I was in the CFL2, these, you know, the trainers and stuff, they'd say, like, Frank, don't worry. A lot of people are taking medication, you know, and I'm like, wow. So a lot of people are taking medication. Like, why is it more normalized that people are dealing with these issues? So here I am just trying to, you know, create a discussion about it and just to make it a bit more normal. Because when I talk about the fact that I'm suicidal, to just for me saying it, that's like, I'm okay with it. So I just say it. But to a lot of people, they hear the word suicide and it triggers something in them. And you can kind of see that in their face and their response. It's like, it's a very traumatizing word, because we associate suicide with death, obviously. Mm-hmm. For me, I can say that I overcame that suicide. And, you know, like, there was it's crazy for me to think now, because I'm just in such a, I feel like I'm in such a healthy place in terms of like my mental health and my energy and my love for myself, my self-love. But there was a time where, like, I was genuinely unhappy with myself, and to the point where, like, you know, I felt like it was the right thing to do to harm myself and kill myself. And you know, it's very powerful to say that in the way that, like, I wanted to end it all. And for me, that, you know, in reflection, looking back, like, I wish, you know, I wish I could have been there for myself, I wish there would have been in some way a way to talk about it more openly, because I, you know, for me to come out and say that I was feeling suicidal at that time, was that in itself was hard. Little did I know that was probably the easiest part of, you know, what was to come, because once I, you know, admitted that I was suicidal, now I was, you know, I had all these labels of bipolar and depression and anxiety, but now people had heard that I was suicidal, and again, with the stigma on mental health and mental illness and all these issues, people put you in a box. So what I found is that my whole life since then, I've been in that, we're not in that box, but, you know, people really judge me in that box and they put me on that scale. So what I've learned is that people feel in different ways and people experience life in different ways. Unfortunately, now that I have all these labels, my whole life is being put on a scale of, okay, is he happy? Okay, he's becoming manic or crazy. Or is he sad? Okay, he's depressed and suicidal, which that's actually probably the toughest thing I have to deal with, because I feel like I live life on a scale of happiness and sadness, just like everybody else. However, because of these labels, now I'm constantly being judged on a scale, mm-hmm. which is, I'm okay with, because I know myself, and at the end of the day, I can take care of myself. But again, for the people who may not have that voice and strength for themselves, there's a lot of people that, you know, they deal with that on a daily by themselves.
Wow, man. I mean, seems like you definitely took that negative and turned it into a positive, and now that's what you're doing for people, as mentioned. So, obviously, you know, doing the motivational speaking and on mental health, I'm sure. What else are you doing? I know you mentioned doing some training with the Lancers and just kind of becoming an entrepreneur now after your football career, it seems.
Yeah, so I was very fortunate to have a lot of experiences in the world of business, from doing door-to-door sales to running a moving company back in the day with a couple of my boys. And so now I'm in a position where I have an opportunity to build and run my own moving company. And I've been doing it for just over a year, kind of officially launched it not too long ago. It's called Rent-A-Brother. So Rent-A-Brother is my moving company that I built upon a foundation and a culture of love and family and brotherhood. So I've got a group of men that I hire that are on the University of Windsor football team, and I work with them. And, you know, it's a great opportunity for me to get to know these athletes, because I feel like there's things that I can share with them and teach them, again, that are things that I only wish somebody would teach me back when I was playing, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm very fortunate because I get to provide a means of income for these guys. One of the biggest challenges as a university athlete is that you're looking to make money, but you don't have the time because you're either training at night or you have school during the day. And there's very limited businesses that will hire somebody knowing that they're only available Tuesday and Thursday. And so that's where I'm thankful that I have this business model that I'm building, that these guys, I let them know. I said, let me know when you're free, and I'll do my best to find you work for you. And that's no guarantee that they're going to get 40 hours a week. However, for me, this is a great opportunity for them to earn some extra money on the side or when they're available, and then also show them a world a little bit, show them the world, because, you know, when I go to my clients and I'm helping somebody move out of their six-bedroom in Amherstburg to, you know, their six-bedroom home in Riverside, but in, like, Bell River, like, that's beautiful, you know what I mean? And for me, it's a great opportunity to see what life can be like. And And I love sharing that with these guys and sharing a little bit of the things that I went through as a football player and the things that I'm doing now and my mentality and my energy, because now I get to take that energy that I put into football and now I get to apply it into something that is my own, and I get to grow that and cultivate that. And my hope and my wish and my dream is that these guys take that energy and those lessons that I share with them, and I pray that all of them become professional football players and get to experience that, and then I pray that they take that energy and then put that into whatever they choose to do in the future with their lives, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's awesome, man. It's pretty much come full circle. That's crazy. To kind of give back and stuff now, and it's pretty cool, man. And to kind of wrap it up, obviously we're living in a weird time right now, given the current circumstances we were talking about before. But as an advocate for mental health for the people out there, how can you kind of practice healthy living mentally right now given the pandemic?
Yeah, so for me, what I've been really doing to practice healthy living is that I'm really just taking this opportunity to be easy on myself. Like, I'm very critical of everything I do. That's been my nature my whole life. But I feel like if I were to say that, that's just the way it is, and it's not healthy, right? Because life isn't just one way. Things happen, and so during these times, what I'm finding is keeping me very healthy and happy, and is that, like I said, I'm being very kind to myself. I know that I can't lift a lot of heavy weights. Like, I just don't have access to heavy weights. I know that one day I will again, and I'm going to go lift heavy and do my thing. But, you know, in terms of exercise and everything, I'll go for runs whenever I feel like going for a run, or I'll go for a walk, or I'll go skip. And I'm really just taking this opportunity to slow down. I briefly touched on, life is very go, go, go. And everybody's really busy kind of doing something, whereas I feel like this is an opportunity to just kind of sit down and not. I've been reading a lot of books, and a lot of books just to kind of like give myself a different perspective on life and how to live and how to stay happy and healthy. And I'm watching different videos and movies and connecting with my family, connecting with my friends here and there, and just this is an opportunity to slow down. And the reason why I'm finding it not even seamless or easy, but I'm just enjoying the slow down process, is again because I'm not being too hard on myself. I know I'm going to lose muscle mass, and I know that there's going to be some things I literally just can't do. But I would say like the old Frank, or like the younger Frank, would beat himself up for not living up to all those expectations that he set for himself in 2020. Like I said, I have big dreams for 2020, but I know that I'm limited right now in the amount of things that I can accomplish, but I'm not going to sit here and beat myself up for the things I can't accomplish.
100%.
I'm going to clap for myself for all the things that I can do. And that's a perspective I've taken from this.
100%, man. And it's not too late either.
Pardon me?
It's not too late either. You know, we have plans for 2020, but we're going to get back to normal soon enough.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, right? You know, everything's kind of stopped, but I'm sure once this thing is all over, like, we're just going to like rev it up again, you know, and everything's going to go back to what it was, but just move forward into whatever life has in store for us. So again, we should just take this opportunity to slow down. I've done a lot of self-reflection and meditation and just kind of like getting to know who I am. And you kind of, when you do those things, you learn a lot about yourself, and you learn a lot about, you know, where you are, where you're going, what's happening right now. And it's a great perspective.
100%, man. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to do this.
I appreciate it. It was fun, man.
All right, everybody, Drake DeMore back here on the Wind City Sports Podcast. That was Frank Reno wrapping it up here on the podcast. If for some reason you didn't listen to last week's, go back and listen to episode 191. I'm going to try to find a way actually to piece them together, maybe put them on YouTube or something like that. But again, just picking up where we left off, man, what a whirlwind roller coaster that guy had been on in the CFL. all while, you know, struggling with mental health. You can see how what he went through can affect anyone's mental health just from the stress and, you know, whatnot of trying to make it in the pro sport ranks. And obviously, you know, people make mistakes. He made a mistake himself, missing the meeting there. But again, just playing the cards you're dealt can be difficult sometimes. So to see him take that and turn it into a positive is unbelievable. And to go back, actually, just yet alone, these are the stories that we highlight here on Win City Sports. 2 years in the CFL after, you know, tearing his ACL the year before, not playing a whole year prior, still getting drafted. It's quite the story. So, and his football career alone, that's something that we would like to highlight here on Win City Sports. And then taking his struggles and making it into a positive to help others, you know, through motivational speaking and mental health advocacy, helping us out here during this weird time. How can we, you know, stay mentally healthy at home, mentally active, stuff like that? It's always good to hear from someone who's struggled with it and who, like he said, he's a good example, good advocate for it. He's perfect. And the follow Rent a Brother on Instagram. Just seen him pop up the other day. I had to give him a follow. That's an awesome thing that he's got going on. True entrepreneur, as we mentioned here on Win City Sports. It's athletes, coaches, trainers, entrepreneurs, and so much more. And he's all those things. He was a player. He was a football player. He was an athlete. Still is, of course. He's training guys now. He's training the University of Windsor team. So that makes him a coach and entrepreneur, running his own business, still working on the side, and then doing some side gigs to make a little extra cash and give back, you know, help out people that might need this for their mental health, stuff like that. So cool story. As mentioned last week, I came across his Instagram profile and thought he was one of those Instagram influencers. I noticed that he was verified. I thought, I wonder what this guy's all about. Why does he have, you know, X amount of followers and a blue check mark? And obviously it was because he was in the CFL, but it fit perfectly into our realm here. An athlete who's now doing something else in Windsor, from Windsor, represents Windsor, you know, in a way. Obviously, as he mentioned last week, he wasn't born here, but now considers himself a Windsor guy, obviously spending majority of his life here. So thanks again to Frank for taking the time to do that and help me create some content here during the quarantine. Still continuing to do so, and hopefully we'll bank some more interviews in the near future. But we're going to wrap it up with a little bit of different sports news, I suppose. First off, I guess we'll leave you off on that little cliffhanger I left you with. At the beginning, I was talking about some documentaries that I like to watch, including obviously Tiger King, and then we have now the ESPN/Netflix collaborated documentary series coming out slowly throughout the next few months in The Last Dance about the Chicago Bulls 97, and Dark Side of the Ring on Vice TV, which is very similar to those Netflix documentaries. I say you can make a Netflix documentary about something that happened here in Windsor. Just going back 4 years ago, it was when it all happened, actually. Jonathan Nicola, he's a 30-year-old, or actually I think he was 28, Sudan, whatever, he's from Sudan. And he came over to Canada, you know, looking just to get in the country, and he decided he's going to go to high school. And once it all kind of came to light, it all kind of blew up, and that was huge mainstream news everywhere. Last year I was recommended by an old high school colleague of mine, Doug Dwyer, to reach out to some high school coaches for Win City Sports, and Pete Cusimano was one of the guys that he mentioned. Did some research on him, and nothing about Jonathan Nicola popped up, but thought, okay, you know, this isn't bad. I heard some things about him from other people. He was working with the Windsor Express as well. Thought, okay, this is good. Did some research on him, and then that article came up, and just the night before I was scheduled to go meet him, I thought, oh shit, this is that guy. I showed up to CCH. They welcomed me into the boardroom. We had a great little chat, and before we got started, Kuz was like, okay, so what are we going to kind of talk about? You know, I laid out what I had down, and he said, we can talk about Jonathan, we can talk about anything. And I was like, look, I didn't really have it on the paper here, but I'm not going to say no to that. So at one point in the interview, as you'll hear, and I guess I didn't really mention that I got him on the podcast a year ago, I didn't know how to really ask him. So we got to this point where, like, I knew kind of where I was going to ask him, like where it would come up, and I was just kind of like, all right, so tell me about Jonathan. And he kind of went off and told his side of the story. So that's why I say it can be a Netflix documentary based on all the things that happen. And you can kind of believe what you want to believe. You know, you can believe Kuz's side of the story or not. I choose to believe him, obviously. I'm not going to say that guy was lying in my face when doing the interview with him. And it's pretty much all that we have versus the Windsor Star story. So, and of course, the people that were there, they know. And then that's just craziness, man. That was all over everything. So you can go back and listen to Pete Cusimano tell his side of the story on episode 132 of Wind City Sports. Tweeted it out on Monday because that was the 4-year anniversary of that story dropping. So yeah, I always like to reminisce on old stuff like that. Last week I was talking about Cole Perbeau, a former Windsor Spitfire from just this past year, a really recent former Windsor Spitfire. He was also on the show a couple weeks ago, episode 189. And he indeed did land at the University of Toronto. I knew that he signed or, you know, was recruited to go to school and play for an OUA team, but I wasn't sure exactly which college or university he landed at. And it looks like it's University of Toronto. He's from Oakville, as we talk about in the interview. Go back and listen to that one as well. At the time, weren't sure where he was going to end up, and quickly made his decision. So congrats to him. And I think there's more to follow as well. I couldn't really find much. Sometimes I'm just scrolling through Twitter, and those are the things that I'm going to try and bring into our quote-unquote news segment of the podcast until further notice. And the last thing I have here is a new gig for another former guest. Episode 160 last summer was Josh Cameron, a former boxer from here in Windsor. He went out to BC, started his own boxing program there, and as well would occasionally go out to Los Angeles and train people there. And as well as BC, I guess he's training a lot of big shots, you know, a lot of actors there, a lot of movies are filmed there, so I guess he's training a lot of actors. And I noticed on LinkedIn that he's got a new gig as a consulting specialist with Red Hill Entertainment, which is actually a company based out of Toronto. So that kind of all makes sense based on his experience, what we talked about with Josh in episode 160. So maybe he made it back to Ontario and he's working for Red Hill Entertainment, or they have an office out in BC and he's kind of taking over things out there, obviously, as mentioned, with his connections and the people he trains and stuff like that. Check him out on Instagram and again, listen to him on episode 160. But that is it this week on Wind City Sports. My name is Drake DeMore and I'm here every Thursday with a brand new episode of the Wind City Sports podcast and radio show. Radio show is live on CJAM 99.1 FM every Thursday in Windsor and Detroit, and replays on Tuesdays at 8. On the radio show, you'll hear some highlights from our podcast interviews, as much local sports news as usually possible, and some good music. Here on the podcast, you'll hear, you know, me kind of boring you for a little bit, then the full, uncut, unedited version of interviews with athletes, coaches, entrepreneurs, and much more. And then again, as much as I want to break down here at the end, we also have a Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube account at WinCity_sports. So give us a like, follow, subscribe, or whatever it may be. We also have, what do we have? I don't know. But give us reviews, give us subscribes, whatever you use. Please support us and do everything you can to help our numbers grow. You can also follow me, Drake DeMore, on Twitter and Instagram at Drake DeMore. But until next week, smell you later and stay safe.